This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. One aspect of the whole Brett Kavanaugh soap opera that hasn't been covered is who's behind all these death threats. And it turns out it's some of the same characters who are part of what Molly McHugh calls the disinformation metropolis. So let's talk to her about that. Molly McHugh is a cybersecurity expert who has a huge article in Wired magazine called Brett Kavanaugh and the Information Terrorists Trying to Reshape America. This disinformation metropolis, now we've talked about them in relationship to, you know, the whole Russian interference in the election thing, but what does it have to do with Brett Kavanaugh?
It's a good question, and obviously the headline is flashy and inflammatory, as editors are always wont to do, but the idea is essentially, especially over the last 2+ years, there's been a lot of coordination of narrative on specific topics. And in some of the other work that I've done and that others have done in the last few years on understanding the promotion of disinformation or fake news, quote unquote, there's been a lot of discussion about bots and automation and fake accounts on Facebook and Twitter and other social media. But the point is, behind all of that are people who are directing these campaigns, who are directing the narrative, who sort of set these topics, behind which people, like real people, sort of organize their own thinking over time, and that has a really corrosive impact in certain instances. And the group that we document in this article, that has been fairly coordinated since before Cleveland, before the GOP convention in 2016, but really leveraging a series of conspiracy theories that sort of evolve over time, that have central themes and central core narrative points, to harden and activate a specific group of people in the country behind a specific set of ideas. And some of those points happen to be what is now being used to defend Brett Kavanaugh, and it was really fast the way that they organized to attack Ford, defend Kavanaugh, the narrative they're using to do it, the way in which they're doing it, the people who are participating in those networks of attacks. And I thought that was something that was really worthy of highlighting, because it shows sort of if you build these pieces of information architecture into the system, they're there waiting and you can use them for other things over time.
Okay, one thing we noticed was that President Trump, who for a few days was treating Christine Blasey Ford's testimony with respect. I mean, it was actually quite surprising. It was sort of hands-off. Suddenly pivoted and started talking about this in terms of the men's rights movement, the danger this poses to young men of being unjustly accused of some horrendous act. Now, was that just him riffing? Because you implied that there was a coordinated campaign behind that shift.
I think there is a coordinated campaign behind the concept of the men's rights movement, which is not the nice, happy counterbalance to women's rights that it sounds on its face. I think what was happening in the case of the president, of the Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee initially, is they really set themselves in this very strange place where I think they were desperately hoping that Ford would seem like a crazy person and they could just discount everything that she said and move on. And no one saw it that way. They saw a legit woman who was terrified to be there, who had something to say. And then they came out of the hearings with this very awkward position to sustain, which is, oh, we totally believe her. We just think that she's wrong about who it is. So everybody's right, which is just not, it was not something that they could defend. And I think what they saw, if you look on social media, if you look at the far right media, in the U.S., you saw the accuser shaming, the she's a liar, here's all the ways she's a liar, you know, we found some neighbor from her childhood who says she's a liar. And that's the feeding frenzy on that side. So, of course, over time, you see Senator Graham, the president, others kind of coming in on that side of just lashing out, saying enough is enough, you know. And the sentiment that has sort of emerged from the men's rights movement, which it itself emerged from an internet thing called Gamergate years ago, is this like spectral idea that, oh God, if any one of us can be accused by some woman of having done anything wrong, it could be all of us, right? It will all be accused and removed from our jobs and our power and defamed, and playing on this fear has been particularly powerful with a specific group of the country who perhaps is not so progressive on women's rights. But it's really, I think it's kind of gotten caught up in the Me Too movement, which has made a lot of people really nervous in the sense that for a while it did seem like all of these allegations were coming out and everybody was going to be accused of something. And I think we're now sort of at this pivot point where women have a lot to say, not just women, others as well, but women have a lot to say about the history of sexual harassment, of the way that they've been treated, of their own assault stories, of other things. And men don't really want to hear about it because it's very uncomfortable. But there's no space between I'm going to take you to court and throw you in prison and I'm not going to say anything about it to have any sort of societal redress of these issues. And that's a really long-winded way of saying I think the president and his supporters are in a really awkward position on Ford because they're trying not to dismiss this woman, and now they've decided that attacking her is the way to win this because that's what Kavanaugh did, and the base loved it. It was red meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that part. What I'm trying to figure out is who is manipulating us, if that's what's going on once again, and if there's some coordination behind that. I mean, is there some giant conspiracy going on here that it's sucking us all in again? And how can we protect ourselves against it? Can you point to a specific story, for example, that was either made up or ginned up? Can you point to somebody who is actually coordinating these death threats that we keep hearing about?
Well, I mean, sure, there were, right after Blasey Ford's name was published, there were threats thrown against her and her family on social media and other things. And the group that we talk about in the that I talk about in the article, which includes many names people will know from the far right crazy verse in the last few years, Mike Cernovich, Jack Posobiec, Sandra Fairbanks, Roger Stone, others. Were involved in sort of spreading around these, she must be lying, it's all a lie, she's the new Anita Hill, she just wants her moment, whatever. These really nasty things and sort of stirring the pot on that side of the narrative from early on. But I think that, I mean, the best example of the way that this machinery is waiting to operate was that now extremely deleted and debunked Twitter thread that a friend of Kavanaugh's from the Federalist Society sort of posted early on, it wasn't Kavanaugh. I've found the house and here's the floor plan and here's the name of the guy that it must have been who attacked Ford. So she's totally right that somebody attacked her, but I've discovered who else it must be. And this amazing, I mean, just total conspiracy theory of, I found a house with a staircase and a bedroom at the top of the stairs, so this must be the guy who raped this woman in high school, which was just, I mean, the whole thing was coming from a lawyer and a credible organization, so fantastically irresponsible, which of course they backed away from sort of like 24 hours later. But the way that that was immediately blogged about, immortalized in the internet, spread across Twitter. If you look at social media, especially on Gab and some of the less savory social media, this is still out there. People still talking about that theory. No, we already know who it is. We already know what these other things are. And this has like many, many heads now as more friends and neighbors and high school classmates emerge to weigh in on things. But the way in which that immediately went from being nothing to less than 24 hours later, I think it was about 12 hours later, being discussed on Fox and Friends, the morning show on Fox News, as if this were real news that was going to change the way that this case was going to go.
The other thing I saw, Molly, was this headline, which briefly flashed on Fox, saying about the two women who cornered Jeff Flake in the elevator, that they were linked to George Soros. Or that they were activists, sort of not saying it, but implying that these were crisis actors.
The sort of within the evolution of the conspiracies that are discussed through the piece, Gamergate to the Seth Rich conspiracy, the way that WikiLeaks has been used, Pizzagate, QAnon, all these things that most Americans do not know anything about because it's so siloed to a specific target audience in the country. But if you look at them, you understand like what these conspiracies are that have been changing the way that our politics are working in this country because they're changing the way that people are thinking in a specific part of the country. There's boogeymen within that architecture that continually pop up. Of course, the Clintons, the Great Evil. But George Soros has been a favorite boogeyman of this particular group of right. And it's gotten far more widespread in the conservative world in the last 5 years. But everything is Soros. Anything bad is Soros. Any protest is paid for by George Soros. Any article is paid for by George Soros. I'm working for George Soros. You're working for George Soros. All the liberal media is working for George Soros. And this is something that I think people like me who have been working on these issues globally and not focused on the United States really worry about, because George Soros has been the favorite boogeyman of the Russians for a very, very, very long time because of his long investments in democracy promotion in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet states. And seeing those things bleed together, this idea that like anything bad is George Soros, and then the demonization of Soros in ways that are very anti-Semitic and sort of very hard to define in concrete terms until you start looking at the memes that they're posting. But the idea that he was a Nazi prison camp guard and just all of this stuff. These are the, in particular, the boogeymen are the things they use to beat the drum. And so anytime they say it was Soros, it was Clinton, it was Podesta, the crowd that eats this stuff up immediately reads it, likes it, shares it, posts it, because they know who these actors are in their own minds, and it allows them to discount a lot of credible information because it's seen as attached to these, you know, great evil puppet masters.
So what do they get out of having Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court?
I honestly, you know, the group that is behind this type of information campaign, they think of themselves as right. They're certainly supporting President Trump's agenda. I'm not sure that Trump is really a conservative, but certainly he pretends to be. I don't think this is about what they get out of Kavanaugh. It's that Kavanaugh fits the narrative they need to keep alive. And so any of these things that fit into these different memes that they use to cultivate their followers and their base, men's rights, women make false accusations for stupid, crazy reasons all the time. You just don't know about them. You know, there's a giant global secret child sex trafficking ring run by Democrats and George Soros and Hillary Clinton and John Podesta that's behind everything. And if only you understood that this is what the Trump presidency is about, saving the world from sex trafficking pedophiles, then you would understand all the things that he's doing. I think that that delivering anything that fits into that agenda, including changing the Supreme Court, sort of allows them to keep the information universe that they need to maintain alive. I don't think it's about Kavanaugh at all, per se. It could be any other body sitting in that chair with an accusation levied against them. But it has been very interesting to see the way that they're using cultivated narrative that has existed over time to come to his defense, which I think was even more interesting because you saw, assuming that the prosecutor in the hearings was given questions by the senators, she was asking Dr. Ford about conspiracy theories. Who paid for your tickets? Who paid for your lawyers? Who paid for your polygraph? The online discussion of all of this being, it was George Soros and Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And that was already bad enough. And then you saw Kavanaugh come out and take this huge swing at the Democrats on the committee, and accusing them of being part of some plot for revenge for the Clintons, which, aside from being incredibly partisan, which is really odd to see from any sort of judicial candidate, is just a conspiracy. The idea that the Clintons are calling up the senators on the committee and telling them what to do in this particular instance. I mean, so the more that I see what is blatant conspiracy being used by credible actors or formerly credible actors from the conservative political and sort of thinkosphere universe, because it's the easy answer, it's the easiest way to divert questions, the more I worry about the way that information is being consumed by conservatives. Because in the same way that you used to see senators and congressmen and candidates for things have to talk about themes that were on voters' minds when those things were legit issues, immigration, healthcare, whatever, these are now the things they have to talk about. These crazed conspiracies that get people to come vote, that get people activated, that get people mobilized. And as long as this is what the information space looks like on the writer side of this country, we're in a lot of trouble, is the bottom line.
Okay, you use the term formerly credible. Who should we not be paying attention to as a result of that, in your opinion? What I'm trying to get at is who has destroyed their credibility in this whole incident as far as you're concerned?
I mean, I think Kavanaugh, for me, as a judicial candidate, ruined any credibility he had by referencing conspiracy in his hearing in his own defense. I think that Senator Graham, who for a long time has been a defender of the issues that I have worked on in foreign policy and of the countries that I have worked with and of the things that I have cared about, domestically has just become a hollow Trump puppet in a way that none of us understand what the hell is happening. But again, going out and talking about these conspiracies, like angrily screaming at crowds on TV and at various forums that, you know, this is all the Democrats out to get Trump and, you know, we're going to do what we want anyway. And when I'm in charge of the committee, then, you know, y'all better watch out. This kind of stuff is not helpful for the discourse of our politics or the discourse of our voters. And I don't think that anybody with access to the stage that they have using their voice in this way is something that's helping to fix the problem in the country.
One more topic, completely different.
Yeah.
There is a story today on CNBC about China planting spy chips in servers. And they were alleging that this happened to Apple. Apple has denied it. Do you know anything about this?
In the Apple case, I don't know. Apple is usually very careful about monitoring their own hardware. There's a reason that a lot of it is like the final assembly is done in the U.S. sometimes. But usually Apple is very careful about their own things. In general, though, China absolutely creates backdoors either in hardware or software for surveillance and other purposes. I mean, the same way that the Russians have, the same way that others do. It's a widespread problem that we have not paid enough attention to. You've seen some references to it in the U.S. in the last few years, the banning of Kaspersky as a sort of security software from the U.S. government because it's, you know, a backdoor to the FSB. And the reference to, I can't remember the two companies, but there were two specific hardware manufacturers that senators were really worried about last year that President Trump was defending in China that were making phones and other things that were wide open to surveillance from Chinese intelligence. This is a problem, this idea that in countries where certain industries are nationally controlled, or all industry is essentially nationally controlled and aligned, that they can use it to their advantage for the collection of information and other things. And in many cases, in the Chinese case, this is usually not has not traditionally been only about national security issues. It's been about corporate surveillance, about sort of stealing plans and copyrighted materials and patents and things like that. But yes, I would 100% believe there are stories about chips being implanted in things for siphoning off information. But we, the United States, need to view cybersecurity and information security the same way that these other countries do, which is it needs to be considered much more of a national security priority than it has been.
Her latest piece is headlined Brett Kavanaugh and the Information Terrorist Trying to Reshape America. Cybersecurity expert Molly McHugh. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks for having me.